Blessings of the Triple Gem, Theruwan Saranai. Welcome to today's session. The title for today's Dhamma session is A Deeper Contemplation of Kamma. And we're going to particularly focus on a sequential insight pathway meditation that helps us to deepen our wisdom or understanding of Kamma through the Buddha's teachings and instructions. So let's begin by paying homage to the Triple Gem. We can bow our heads and Anjali. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dhamma, and homage to the Noble Sangha. When we talk about the Four Noble Truths, we know that the way leading to the cessation of suffering is the Noble Eightfold Path. And the Noble Eightfold Path leads with right view. And there are many suttas where the Buddha expounds on this. In doing so, the Buddha enunciates what is wrong view and right view, with right view being twofold, so mundane and supramundane right view. In today's Dhamma session, by methodically contemplating and connecting a series of teachings by the Buddha on Kamma, this will deepen our understanding of wrong view and right view, and more importantly, will be nourishing right view that is noble, taintless, supramundane, a factor of the path. If you remember in the Mahachaturisika Sutta, the Buddha stated, therein bhikkhus, right view comes first. And how does right view come first? One understands wrong view as wrong view, and right view as right view. This is one's right view. And what bhikkhus is wrong view? There is nothing given, nothing offered, nothing sacrificed, no fruit or result of good and bad actions. No this world, no other world, no mother, no father, no beings who are reborn spontaneously, no good and virtuous recluses and Brahmins in the world who have realized for themselves by direct knowledge and declare this world and the other world. This is wrong view. So one of the fundamental things about wrong view is that one does not accept karma and rebirth. And then the Buddha went on to state, and what bhikkhus is right view? Right view, I say, is twofold. There is right view that is affected by taints, partaking of merit, ripening in the acquisitions. And there is right view that is noble, taintless, supramundane, a factor of the path. And what bhikkhus is right view that is affected by the taints, partaking of merit, ripening in the acquisitions? There is what is given and what is offered and what is sacrificed. There is fruit and result of good and bad actions. There is this world and the other world. There is mother and father. There are beings who are reborn spontaneously. There are in the world good and virtuous recluses and Brahmins who have realized for themselves by direct knowledge and declare this world and the other world. This is right view affected by taints, partaking of merit, ripening in the acquisitions. And what bhikkhus is right view that is noble, taintless, supramundane, a factor of the path? The wisdom, the faculty of wisdom, the power of wisdom, the investigation of Dhamma enlightenment factor, the path factor of right view in one whose mind is noble, whose mind is taintless, who possesses the noble path, and is developing the noble path. This is right view that is noble, taintless, supramundane, a factor of the path. So our focus in this session is primarily on supramundane right view. However, all aspects of wrong view and right view will be covered as part of our contemplation today. And when we establish right view, it nourishes wisdom. And by developing wisdom, conviction in Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha will grow. So with regards to the supramundane right view, the Buddha highlighted wisdom, the faculty of wisdom, the power of wisdom, the investigation of Dhamma enlightenment factor, the path factor of right view, as important to one developing the Noble Eightfold Path. So if you remember when Venerable Nagasena was asked by King Milinda, by how many kinds of wisdom does one become wise? And Venerable Nagasena answered, by one, that is to say, by the kind of wisdom called investigation of Dhamma or Dhamma Vichaya Sambojanga. So we're going to use Dhamma Vichaya Sambojanga to contemplate Kamma today. Now in the Kaya Sutta, this is Sanyutta Nikaya, chapter 46, discourse number 2. The Buddha stated, bhikkhus, just as his body, sustained by nutriment, subsists in dependence on nutriment, a and does not subsist without nutriment, so too the seven factors of enlightenment sustained by nutriment subsist in dependence on nutriment and do not subsist without nutriment. And with reference to Dhamma Vicaya Sambhojanga, the Buddha has said, and what bhikkhus is the nutriment for the arising of the unarisen enlightenment factor of investigation of Dhamma, and for the fulfillment of development of the arisen enlightenment factor of investigation of Dhamma? There are bhikkhus, wholesome and unwholesome states, blamable and blameless states, inferior and superior states, dark and bright states with their counterparts, frequently wisely contemplating, or frequent wise contemplation of them is the nutriment for the arising of the unarisen enlightenment factor of investigation of Dhamma and for the fulfillment by development of the arisen enlightenment factor of investigation of Dhamma. In this session today, we will be wisely contemplating in a progressive way wholesome and unwholesome states, blamable and blameless states, inferior and superior states, and dark and bright states with their counterparts, and we'll be referencing key teachings of the Buddha to deepen our understanding of karma and rebirth. When we see these four sets of qualities clearly and we explore with wisdom, it is included in the power of wisdom, which the Buddha highlighted in the Balla Sutta. This is Anguttara Nikaya, Chapter 9, Discourse Number 5. In that sutta, the Buddha talked about the development of four powers that overcome five fears. And with regard to the power of wisdom, the Buddha stated, one has clearly seen and explored with wisdom those qualities that are unwholesome and reckoned as unwholesome, those that are wholesome and reckoned as wholesome, those that are blamable and reckoned as blamable, those that are blameless and reckoned as blameless, those that are dark and reckoned as dark, those that are bright and reckoned as bright, those that should not be cultivated and are reckoned as not to be cultivated, those that are that should be cultivated and are reckoned to be as to be cultivated, those that are unworthy of the noble ones and reckoned as unworthy of the noble ones, those that are worthy of the noble ones and reckoned as worthy of the noble ones. This is called the power of wisdom. So this deeper contemplation today will help us to grow in wisdom to penetrate this Dhamma. Before we deep dive into the four sets of qualities, it's good to refresh our minds with the Buddha's teachings in the Kamma Nirodha Sutta. This is Samyutta Nikaya, Chapter 35, Discourse Number 146. We've referenced some of this in previous Dhamma sessions before, and going over it again will help us to understand this contemplation today. First, the Buddha asked, and what bhikkhus is all karma? The eye is all karma, to be seen as generated and fashioned by volition, as something to be felt. The ear is all karma, the mind is all karma, to be seen as generated and fashioned by volition, as something to be felt. This is called all karma. As we said before, the physical body, all 32 body parts we have in this life, is the result of all karma, old actions by body, speech, and mind. And then the Buddha asked, and what bhikkhus is new karma? Whatever action one does now by body, speech, and mind, this is called new karma. So whatever actions by body, speech, and mind we undertake now, wholesome or unwholesome, this is new karma. And then the Buddha asked, and what bhikkhus is the cessation of karma? When one reaches liberation through the cessation of bodily action, verbal action, and mental action, this is called the cessation of karma. So the cessation of actions by body, speech, and mind leads to liberation, which is the cessation of karma. And then finally, the Buddha asked, and what bhikkhus is the way leading to the cessation of karma? And the answer is, it is this noble eightfold path, that is right view, right intention or right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration. So if we develop the noble eightfold path, it leads to the cessation of karma. So what this really tells us is our previous actions, both good and bad, or all karma, led to this current birth. And our current actions, both good and bad, make new karma, which we experience now or in the future. And if we continue on the same trajectory, we can expect to remain bound to samsara, bound to our karma, both good and bad. And developing the Noble Eightfold Path is the way out of this predicament. So keeping all of these things in mind as we go through, this will help for the rest of this session. So let's begin with the first set of qualities, which is wholesome and unwholesome states, and also known as skilled and unskilled states, so kusala akusala dhamma. There are countless suttas where the Buddha has taught about wholesome and unwholesome states. One such teaching is the Kusala Sutta in Anguttara Nikaya, chapter 10, discourse number 180. And the Buddha has stated, Bhikkhus, I will teach you what is wholesome and what is unwholesome. Listen and attend closely, I will speak. Yes, Bhante, these bhikkhus replied. The Blessed One said this, and what bhikkhus is unwholesome? Killing living beings, taking what is not given, sexual misconduct, false speech, divisive speech, harsh speech, idle chatter or frivolous speech, covetousness, ill will, and wrong view. This is called unwholesome. And what bhikkhus is wholesome? Abstention from killing living beings, abstention from taking what is not given, abstention from sexual misconduct, abstention from false speech, abstention from divisive speech, abstention from harsh speech, abstention from idle chatter, non-covetousness, non-ill will, and right view. This is called wholesome. And we know from the Samadhitti Sutta, so Majjhima Nikaya discourse number 9, the Buddha also stated, when, friends, a noble disciple understands the unwholesome and the root of the unwholesome, the wholesome and the root of wholesome, in that way he is one of right view, whose view is straight, who has unwavering confidence in the Dhamma, and has arrived at this true Dhamma. If we have right view, then it is possible to develop all the other path factors of the Noble Eightfold Path, which is significant if we wish to find the way out of this whole mess of suffering. Often we think, particularly if we're in Dhamma and practicing the Buddha's teachings, that we know what is wholesome and what is unwholesome. We've heard it all before, we know the distinction between them. And in the best case scenario, if there is some right view, then we know how to purify the unwholesome states in order to establish and develop the wholesome states. An example would be if we've correctly cultivated the loving kindness meditation by following Karaniya Metta Sutta. But it's good to be more thorough, to admit that there are deficiencies in our actual conduct, and also to understand and be willing to go deeper to investigate the truth so we can properly develop supramundane right view and grow in wisdom and conviction. And quite simply, if there are no deficiencies in our conduct and understanding, then we would have perfected this noble path and realized the fruit of arahantship. So let's revisit these unwholesome states in a bit more detail. And bear in mind, based on dependent origination, our current actions by body, speech, and mind are the ones that are making new karma, that keep us bound to samsara and this whole mass of suffering. So listen carefully as we read the Buddha's words from the Pathama Niraya Sagga Sutta. This is Anguttara Nikaya, chapter 10, discourse number 211. And listen as if hearing for the first time. The Buddha stated, Bhikkhus, possessing 10 states, one is deposited in hell as if brought there. What 10? 1. Here someone kills living beings. He is murderous, bloody-handed, given to blows and violence, merciless to living beings. 2. He takes what is not given. He steals the wealth and property of others in the village or forest. 3. He engages in sexual misconduct. He has sexual relations with women who are protected by their mother and father, brother, sister, or relatives, who are protected by their Dhamma, who have a husband whose violation entails a penalty, or even with anyone already engaged. 4. He speaks falsehood. If he is summoned to a council, to an assembly, to his relative's presence, to his guild or to the court, and questioned as witness thus, so good man, tell what you know. Then, not knowing, he says, I know, or knowing, he says, I do not know. Not seeing, he says, I see, or seeing, he says, I do not see. Thus, he consciously speaks falsehood for his own ends, or for another's ends, or for some trifling worldly end. 5. He speaks divisively. Having heard something here, he repeats it somewhere in order to divide those people from these. Or having heard something elsewhere, he repeats it to these people in order to divide them from those. Thus, he is one who divides those who are united, a creator of divisions, one who enjoys factions, rejoices in factions, delights in factions, a speaker of worlds that create factions. Six, he speaks harshly. He utters words that are rough, hard, hurtful to others, offensive to others, bordering on anger, unconducive to concentration. Seven, he indulges in frivolous speech. He speaks at an improper time, speaks falsely, speaks what is unbeneficial, speaks contrary to the Dhamma and the discipline. At an improper time, he speaks such words as are worthless, unreasonable, rambling, and unbeneficial. Eight, he is full of covetousness. He longs for the wealth and property of others. Thus, oh, may what belongs to another be mine. Nine, he has a mind of ill will and intentions of hate. Thus, may these beings be slain, slaughtered, cut off, destroyed, or annihilated. Ten, he holds wrong view and has an incorrect perspective. Thus, there is nothing given, nothing sacrificed, nothing offered. There is no fruit or result of good and bad actions. There is no this world, no other world. There is no mother, no father. There are no beings spontaneously reborn. There are in the world no ascetics and Brahmins of right conduct and right practice who, having realized this world and the other world for themselves, by direct knowledge make them known to others. So these 10 unwholesome states are rooted in the unwholesome. And we know from the Kamanidana Sutta, the Buddha has stated all 10 unwholesome states are caused by greed, caused by hatred, and caused by delusion. Thus, greed is a source and origin of kamma. Hatred is a source and origin of kamma. Delusion is a source and origin of kamma. And for further details on mapping these 10 unwholesome states to greed, hatred, and delusion, this can be found in the Nettipakarana, so the guide, or also the Pathagupadesa, which is the Pitaka disclosure. Essentially, what we understand is these 10 unwholesome states and their unwholesome roots, they aid the wrong path. So they aid wrong view, wrong thought, wrong speech, wrong action, wrong livelihood, wrong mindfulness, and wrong concentration. And the most important point here is when we abandon the unwholesome and the roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, we can abandon the wrong path. And as a result of that, the wholesome and the roots of non-greed, non-hatred, and non-delusion can come to fulfillment, and the Noble Eightfold Path prospers and succeeds. Now, why this is important to the enlightenment factor of investigation of Dhamma, or Dhammavicaya Sambhojanga, is because we always come back to the arising and passing away phenomena. When we fully investigate and understand, then what happens is we lean heavily towards cessation, Nirodha in Pali. So, cessation of craving, meaning the cessation of suffering. If we don't know the link between the unwholesome and their roots and the wrong path, or if we tolerate, indulge, or even justify the unwholesome, then we continue as we've done for countless lifetimes and remain bound to samsara and this whole mass of suffering. It can be helpful to contemplate whether we truly understand the link between the 10 unwholesome states and the First Noble Truth of suffering. For example, when a person kills living beings, conceit arises around the act of killing. So, a hunter who has hunted animals, there's conceit, or a killer who has murdered, or a warrior awarded medals for killing. So, such a person takes delight or has pleasure from death, and they have the wrong view that tolerates, indulges, or justifies killing. And as a result, a killer doesn't understand that death is suffering. And when we talk about death, it's not just one death, but countless deaths over immeasurable lifetimes. From a supramundane right view, when we heavily investigate the wholesome and unwholesome states and understand their roots, what we come to realize is it is due to unwholesome that we follow the wrong path. Out of ignorance and craving, there is delight. Delight is the condition for clinging. Clinging is the condition for existence. And existence is the condition for birth. And birth is the condition for aging and death and the whole mass of suffering. This is the arising phenomenon of suffering, the Samudaya in Pali. So birth is connected with the unwholesome, the akusala, and suffering. This is the pathway we contemplate in the Samadhi Bhavana Sutta, Sanyutta Nikaya, Chapter 22, Discourse Number 5. So we understand, as it really is, the arising and passing away of the five aggregates, and also understand dependent origination. So wholesome, kusala, is the abstention of the unwholesome. So abstention from killing living beings, abstention from taking what is not given, abstention from sexual misconduct, abstention from the four kinds of wrong speech, abstention from non-covetousness, or abstention from covetousness, which is non-covetousness, so non-ill will, and of course, right view. So these are rooted in non-greed, non-hatred, and non-delusion, and connected with the Noble Eightfold Path, the way leading to the cessation of suffering, to Nibbana, which means happiness. This is the passing away phenomena, or cessation of suffering, Adhangama in Pali. From a super mundane right view, wholesome is connected with understanding our predicament and not wanting to be reborn in any realms of existence. In other words, no more dependent origination, which means we want to cease coming to exist, cease clinging, cease delight, cease craving. As we know, that means we don't take delight, we don't welcome, and we don't remain holding, which means we want to abandon unwholesome states and the roots of the unwholesome. So the supramundane contemplation of wholesome and unwholesome states is a very deep contemplation, and we do have the tools to do that. And wise contemplation, meaning yonisomanasikara in Pali, needs to be applied thoroughly. The second set of terms or qualities to examine is blameable and blameless states. So savajja anavajja dhamma. We can reference the Savajja Sutta. This is Anguttara Nikaya, Chapter 10, Discourse Number 140. And this is where the Buddha has said, Bhikkhus, I will teach you what is blameable and what is blameless. Listen and attend closely. I will speak. Yes, Bhante, those bhikkhus replied. The Blessed One said this, and what bhikkhus is blameable? Wrong view, wrong intention, wrong speech, wrong action, wrong livelihood, wrong effort, wrong mindfulness, wrong concentration, wrong knowledge, and wrong liberation. This is called blameable. And what bhikkhus is blameless? Right view, right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration, right knowledge, and right liberation. This is called blameless. Here we can see that the wrong path is blameable or blameworthy, while the Noble Tenfold Path is blameless. As we contemplated in the previous part on wholesome and unwholesome states, it is by taking an unwholesome, all the 10 kinds of misconduct by body, speech, and mind, that we develop this wrong path. This is what makes us blameable. If we contemplate our daily life, whether it is at work or at home or elsewhere, what we come to realize when we do this contemplation is that we spend most of our time in the unwholesome. Other than when we're meditating correctly, we undertake the unwholesome by body, speech, and mind. Only an arahant is not doing the unwholesome, having destroyed the taints. Now, if we can see this, then we can acknowledge that most of the time we are cultivating the wrong path, and therefore we are blamable. In the meditation, we need to abandon these unwholesome things, the misconduct by body, speech, and mind, because we want to develop the noble path that is blameless, leading with right view, right thought, all the way to right liberation. And we do so by abstaining from all the misconduct by body, speech, and mind, what is unwholesome. In this way, we are rooted in non-greed, non-hatred, and non-delusion. And this is what makes us blameless. So we need to fully understand this and map it in our minds. We don't want the unwholesome because it's rooted in greed, hatred, and delusion and aids the wrong path. The wrong path is blameable because there is no ending of craving, there is no ending of karma, and therefore there is no ending of suffering. So if we cultivate the unwholesome by body, speech, and mind, rebirth is not ended. Instead, we want the wholesome because it's rooted in non-greed, non-hatred, and non-delusion and enables the noble path. The noble path is blameless, because it leads to the ending of craving, the ending of karma, and therefore the ending of suffering. So if we cultivate the wholesome by body, speech, and mind, then rebirth is ended. So it's important to contemplate from our own perspective, applying this Dhamma to ourselves. For example, we can contemplate, how did we construct this birth? Was it due to wholesome or unwholesome? Blamable or blameless? When we contemplate, we realize it's because of unwholesome and blamable, meaning we took unwholesome or misconduct by body, speech, and mind in the past, aiding the wrong path, resulting in this birth in the human realm. Now we contemplate, if we continue with the unwholesome and blamable, what would be the result? And the answer is more of the same, another birth, more suffering. When we see this in our meditation, what should arise is a very strong determination to abandon unwholesome and blamable. And we abandon it, and instead we cultivate wholesome and blameless. So you can see the link between these two sets, wholesome and unwholesome, and blamable and blameless. Wholesome and blameless is often referred to together throughout the Buddha's teachings. He would often ask the question, is this wholesome or unwholesome? Is this blamable or blameless? And in the Bala Sutta, Anguttara Nikaya, chapter 9, discourse number 5, the Buddha stated, a noble disciple who engages in blameless bodily, verbal, and mental actions, or wholesome, they have the power of blamelessness. And in the Ananya Sutta, Anguttara Nikaya, chapter 4, discourse number 62, the Buddha taught that having known the happiness of freedom from debt, one should recall the happiness of ownership. Enjoying the happiness of enjoyment, a person then sees things clearly with wisdom. While seeing things clearly, the wise one knows both kinds of happiness. The other is not worth a 16th part of the bliss of blamelessness. So in the meditation, when we do this contemplation, there may be happiness that arises when one realizes, if I walk this path of wholesome instead of unwholesome, and I generate the path that is blameless rather than blamable, happiness arises in the mind. The third set of terms is to examine inferior and superior states, so Hina Panita Dhamma. We can reference the Chulakamma Vibhanga Sutta, which is Majjhima Nikaya discourse number 135, where the Buddha was asked by the Brahmin student Subha, who is Todaya's son. And he asked, Master Gautama, what is the cause and condition why human beings are seen to be inferior and superior? For people are seen to be short-lived and long-lived, sickly and healthy, ugly and beautiful, uninfluential and influential, poor and wealthy, low-born and high-born, stupid or foolish and wise. What is the cause and condition, Master Gautama, why human beings are seen to be inferior and superior? And then the Buddha stated, student, beings are owners of their karma, heirs of their karma. They originate from their karma, are bound to their karma, have karma as their refuge. It is karma that distinguishes beings as inferior and superior. So the question asked by student Suba is about the cause and condition for inferior and superior states. So inferior being short-lived, sickly, ugly, uninfluential, poor, low-born, and stupid or foolish. And superior being long-lived, healthy, influential, wealthy, high-born, and wise. And the Buddha's answers was to emphasize that karma is what distinguishes inferior and superior states. And of course, we've heard the statement on karma from the Buddha before, when it comes to his encouragement to frequently contemplate that we are the owners of our karma, heirs of our karma, originate from our karma, are bound to our karma, and have karma as our refuge. The truth is, we don't contemplate karma correctly, nor are we really encouraged to do so. In most cases, when it is taught, there are so many caveats given at the outset that it makes it very difficult, if not obstructive, to establish right view. But whatever the case may be, it's important to methodically go through the Buddha's core teachings on karma to establish right view and to contemplate karma thoroughly. This Chulakamma Vibhanga Sutta is one of the most important discourses on karma and its results. And when the Buddha gave his brief answer to student Subha that karma is the cause and condition for inferior and superior states, Subha asked the Buddha to teach him the Dhamma in detail so he could understand the meaning of the Buddha's statement on karma. So let's first look at the causes and conditions for inferior states. The table here summarizes what was explained by the Buddha. So when it comes to killing living beings, the Buddha stated in the discourse, "Here, student, some man or woman kills living beings and is murderous, bloody-handed, given to blows and violence, merciless to living beings. Because of performing and undertaking such action, on the dissolution of the body, after death, he reappears in a state of deprivation, in an unhappy destination, in perdition, even in hell. But if on the dissolution of the body after death, he does not reappear in a state of deprivation, in an unhappy destination, in perdition, in hell, but instead comes back to the human state, then wherever he is reborn, he is short-lived. This is the way, student, that leads to short life. Namely, one kills living beings and is murderous, bloody-handed, given to blows and violence, merciless to living beings. And then when it comes to given to injuring beings with the hand or with weapons, the Buddha stated, here, student, some man or woman is given to injuring beings with hand, with a clod, with a stick, or with a knife. Because of performing and undertaking such action, on the dissolution of the body after death, he reappears in a state of deprivation. But if instead he comes back to the human state, then wherever he is reborn, he is sickly. This is the way, student, that leads to sickliness. Namely, one is given to injuring beings with the hand, with a clod, with a stick, or with a knife. And then when it comes to an angry and irritable character, the Buddha stated, here, student, some man or woman is of an angry and irritable character. Even when criticized a little, he is offended, becomes angry, hostile, and resentful, and displays anger, hate, and bitterness. Because of performing and undertaking such action, he reappears in a state of deprivation. But if instead he comes back to the human state, then wherever he is reborn, he is ugly. This is the way, student, that leads to ugliness. Namely, one is of an angry and irritable character and displays anger, hate, and bitterness. And then when it comes to being envious, resentful, and begrudges others' good fortune, the Buddha stated, here, student, some man or woman is envious. One who envies, resents, and begrudges the gains, honor, respect, reverence, salutations, and veneration received by others. Because of performing and undertaking such action, he reappears in a state of deprivation. But if instead he comes back to the human state, then wherever he is reborn, he is uninfluential. This is the way, student, that leads to being uninfluential. Namely, one is envious towards the gains, honor, respect, reverence, salutations, and veneration received by others. And when it comes to does not give offerings of requisites to ascetics and Brahmins, the Buddha stated, here, student, some man or woman does not give food, drink, clothing, carriages, garlands, scents, unguents, beds, dwelling, and lamps to recluses or Brahmins. Because of performing and undertaking such action, he reappears in a state of deprivation. But if instead he comes back to the human state, then wherever he is reborn, he is poor. This is the way, student, that leads to poverty. Namely, one does not give food, and so on, and lamps to recluses or Brahmins. And when it comes to being obstinate and arrogant, the Buddha stated, here, student, some man or woman is obstinate and arrogant. He does not pay homage to one who should receive homage, does not rise up for one in whose presence he should rise up, does not offer a seat to one who deserves a seat, does not make way for one for whom he should make way, and does not honor, respect, revere, and venerate one who should be honored, respected, revered, and venerated. Because of performing and undertaking such action, he reappears in a state of deprivation. And if instead he comes back to the human state, then wherever he is reborn, he is low-born. This is the way, student, that leads to low birth. Namely, one is obstinate and arrogant and does not honor, respect, revere, and venerate who should be honored, respected, revered, and venerated. And then the final one is when one does not visit ascetics and Brahmins to ask Dhamma questions seeking the truth. The Buddha stated, here, student, some man or woman does not visit a recluse or a Brahmin and ask, Venerable Sir, what is wholesome? What is unwholesome? What is blamable? What is blameless? What should be cultivated? What should not be cultivated? What kind of action will lead to my harm and suffering for a long time? What kind of action will lead to my welfare and happiness for a long time? Because of performing and undertaking such action, he reappears in a state of deprivation. But if instead he comes back to the human state, then wherever he is reborn, he is stupid or foolish. This is the way, student, that leads to stupidity, namely, one does not visit a recluse or Brahmin and ask questions. So when you read that out, it does stir up certain things. You know, there has been misconduct in this lifetime, such as this. So it's very good. So the contemplation we need to do is to see ourselves having been born to the human state, that it has led to these inferior states. Now, this is not how we usually think of ourselves in terms of being inferior, but if we contemplate this Dhamma correctly, then we can make a real breakthrough when it comes to our understanding of karma and rebirth. So it's important to place ourselves in the lowest position, so an inferior position, not superior. So if we think we are superior, then we won't be able to penetrate this Dhamma. For example, if we compare ourselves within the human realm and we think, I'm wealthy compared to most people, or I'm born to a good family, and so on. Or if we compare ourselves to beings in the lower realms, for example, I'm superior to animals or hungry goats or those in the hell realms, then there's conceit. And because of conceit, we won't get the meaning of the Buddha's teaching. So, how should we contemplate? If we recollect that there are beings born to the divine world, so the Deva realm and Brahma realms, and contemplate that we are inferior compared to them. So, if we go down the list of inferior states, compared to divine beings or devas, we are short-lived, we are sickly, we are ugly, we are uninfluential, we are poor, we are low-born, and we are stupid. So, when the Buddha encourages us to recollect the divine being, so Devata Anusarati in Pali, this is one of the six recollections, and we contemplate that they possess conviction, virtuous behavior, learning, generosity, and wisdom, because of which, when they passed away, they were reborn into those realms. So they have superior states because they're long-lived, they're healthy, they're influential, they're far wealthier, they're high-born, and they're wise. So this is the reflection that appears in the Anusatthana Sutta. And we also know from the 85 accounts in the Vimanavatthu, so these are the stories of heavenly mansions, that this supports that birth in those divine realms is superior. So if we were to ask, how do we arrive at these inferior states? The answer comes back as the unwholesome. We have done unwholesome karma in the past by body, speech, and mind. And this is what has led to birth in this human state with its inferior states. So, compared to divine beings in this human state, we are short-lived because we killed living beings in the past. We are sickly because we injured beings with our hands or with weapons in the past. We are ugly because we had an angry and irritable character in the past. We are uninfluential because we were envious, resentful. We begrudged others' gains or their good fortune in the past. We are poor because we didn't give offerings to recluses or ascetics and Brahmins in the past. And we are lowborn because we were obstinate and arrogant in the past. And the last one, we are stupid or foolish because we didn't visit ascetics and Brahmins to ask Dhamma questions in the past. So this is how we need to wisely contemplate, to recognize we've done unwholesome karma in the past and it's led to rebirth in an inferior state in this human realm, resulting in all the different unfavorable and challenging things that we face now. And there's also the Dvicharita Vipaka Sutta, this is Anguttara Nikaya chapter 8, discourse number 40, where the Buddha taught about the results of misconduct for killing living beings again, taking what is not given, sexual misconduct, false speech, divisive speech, harsh speech, frivolous speech, and drinking alcohol. So we won't go into detail in this Dhamma session, but this can also be contemplated as part of understanding the causes and conditions for inferior states. And in the case of causes and conditions for superior states, the table here summarizes what was explained by the Buddha. So when it comes to abstaining from killing beings, the Buddha stated, but here, students, some man or woman abandoning the killing of living beings abstains from killing living beings with rod and weapon laid aside. Gentle and kindly, he abides compassionate to all living beings. Because of performing and undertaking such action, on the dissolution of the body after death, he reappears in a happy destination, even in the heavenly world. But if on the dissolution of the body after death, he does not reappear in a happy destination in the heavenly world, but instead comes back to the human state, then wherever he is reborn, he is long lived. This is the way, student, that leads to long life, namely abandoning the killing of living beings. One abstains from killing living beings with rod and weapon laid aside, gentle and kindly. One abides compassionate to all living beings. And then when it comes to not given to injuring beings with hand or with weapons, the Buddha stated, but here, student, some man or woman is not given to injuring beings with the hand, with a clod, with a stick, or with a knife. Because of performing and undertaking such action, on the dissolution of the body, after death, he reappears in a happy destination. But if instead he comes back to the human state, then wherever he is reborn, he is healthy. This is the way, student, that leads to health. Namely, one is not given to injuring beings with the hand, with a clod, with a stick, or with a knife. And then when it comes to not of an angry and irritable character, the Buddha stated, but here, student, some man or woman is not of an angry and irritable character. Even when criticized a lot, he is not offended, does not become angry, hostile, and resentful, and does not display anger, hate, and bitterness. Because of performing and undertaking such action, he reappears in a happy destination. But if instead he comes back to the human state, then wherever he is reborn, he is beautiful. This is the way, student, that leads to being beautiful, namely, one is not of an angry and irritable character and does not display anger, hate, and bitterness. And when it comes to not envious, resentful, nor begrudging others' good fortune, the Buddha stated, but here, student, some man or woman is not envious. One who does not envy, resent, and begrudge the gains, honor, respect, reverence, salutations, and veneration received by others. Because of performing and undertaking such action, he reappears in a happy destination. But if instead he comes to the human state, then wherever he is reborn, he is influential. This is the way, student, that leads to being influential. Namely, one is not envious towards the gains, honor, respect, reverence, salutations, and veneration received by others. And when it comes to giving offerings of requisites to ascetics and Brahmins, the Buddha stated, but here, student, some man or woman gives food and lamps to recluses or Brahmins. Because of performing and undertaking such action, he reappears in a happy destination. But if instead he comes back to the human state, then wherever he is reborn, he is wealthy. This is the way, student, that leads to wealth. Namely, one gives food and lamps to recluses or Brahmins. And then, when it comes to not obstinate and arrogant, the Buddha stated, but here, student, some man or woman is not obstinate and arrogant. He pays homage to one who should receive homage, rises up for one in whose presence he should rise up, offers a seat to one who deserves a seat, makes way for one for whom he should make way. And honors, respects, reveres, and venerates one who should be honored, respected, revered, and venerated. Because of performing and undertaking such action, he reappears in a happy destination. But if he comes back to a human state, then wherever he is reborn, he is high born. This is the way, student, that leads to high birth. Namely, one is not obstinate and arrogant, and honors, respects, reveres, and venerates one who should be honored and respected, revered, and venerated. And lastly, when it comes to visits, ascetics, and Brahmins to ask questions seeking the truth, the Buddha stated, but here, students, a man or woman visits a recluse or a Brahmin and asks, Venerable Sir, what is wholesome? What kind of action will lead to my welfare and happiness for a long time? Because of performing and undertaking such action, he reappears in a happy destination. But if instead he comes back to the human state, then wherever he is reborn, he is wise. This is the way, student, that leads to wisdom. Namely, one visits a recluse or Brahmin and asks questions. So the contemplation we need to do when it comes to superior states is to understand that even if we realize good results, superior states, namely long-lived, healthy, influential, wealthy, high-born, and wise, from a supra-mundane right view, we must understand that within the context of our bigger picture predicament of how we're bound to samsara, that it still leads to this whole mass of suffering. So it's very important not to become conceited due to superior states. This is what must be contemplated in the meditation. And we can also contemplate why we are born with inferior or superior states, whether it is rebirth in lower realms, in this human realm, or divine realms. We can see arising and passing away in any of these scenarios, and that karma is the cause and condition for receiving inferior and superior states. And the important point here is that if rebirth is not ended, back to our initial contemplation, then craving has not been abandoned. We're still bound by karma and subject to suffering in any of these realms of existence. So if we penetrate this Dhamma, what we come to realize is that we would not want to be reborn in any realm of existence and suffer. Instead, we want to incline towards the cessation of craving, the cessation of karma, and of course, the cessation of suffering. So this means we want to realize Nibbana. And then the fourth and last set of terms to examine is dark and bright states, or black and white states, sometimes said, with their counterparts. So in Pali, Kanhasukha Sapatibhaga Dhamma. And there are a number of suttas where the Buddha gave teachings on this subject. And this includes the Pugala Sutta, so Anguttara Nikaya chapter 3, discourse number 21, and also the Tamottama Sutta, Anguttara Nikaya chapter 4, discourse number 85. In those instances, the Buddha only talks about four different states. But for a more comprehensive examination, we'll look at the Chalabhijati Sutta. This is Anguttara Nikaya chapter 6, discourse number 57. Because the Buddha talks about six classes here. And Venerable Ananda was the one that asked the Buddha about these six classes of rebirth with reference to Purana or Purana Kassapa description. So in that case, Purana Kassapa described a black class, a blue class, a red class, and a yellow class, as well as a white class and a supreme white class. So, by way of background, Purana Kassapa, he described the black class as being butchers of sheep, pigs, poultry, and deer, hunters and fishermen, thieves, executioners, and prison wardens, or those who follow any other such cruel occupation. For the blue class, he said they were bhikkhus who live on thorns or any others who profess the doctrine of karma, the doctrine of the efficacy of deeds. The red class, he said was about the Niganthas wearing a single garment, the yellow class as the white robe lay disciples of the naked ascetics, the white class as the male and female Ajivikas, and the supreme white class as Nandavacha, Kissa Sankincha, and Makali Gosala. And when Venerable Ananda mentioned this to the Buddha responded to Venerable Ananda by asking, has the whole world authorized Purana Kassapa to describe these six classes? And Venerable Ananda replied, certainly not, Bhante. And then the Buddha gave a simile. Suppose, Ananda, there was a poor, destitute, indigent person. They might force a cut of meat on him against his will, saying, good man, you must eat this piece of meat and pay for it. In the same way, without the consent of those ascetics and Brahmins, Purana Kassapa has described these six classes in a foolish, incompetent, inexpert, and unskilled way. But I, Ananda, describe six different classes. Listen and attend closely, I will speak. And so the Buddha gave the following teaching. And what, Ananda, are the six classes? Here, someone of the dark class produces a dark state. Someone of the dark class produces a bright state. Someone of the dark class produces Nibbana, which is neither dark nor bright. Then someone of the bright class produces a dark state. Someone of the bright class produces a bright state. And lastly, someone of the bright class produces Nibbana, which is neither dark nor bright. So, what we will see here is that the Buddha talks about a more detailed explanation, and we'll go through that. But firstly, let's just mention that the dark class. So this characterizes those who dwell in darkness. So they don't have knowledge or conviction that there are results for bad, unwholesome action. So they don't understand karma and rebirth, or they don't believe in karma and rebirth. So the dark class is imbued with darkness, ignorance, delusion, and they have no knowledge of the truth as it really is. In other words, they're ignorant of the Four Noble Truths, and they don't know the magnitude of our predicament because of the wrong view. And then the bright class characterizes those who have some wisdom and understanding about wholesome and unwholesome states, blamable and blameless states, what is to be cultivated and what is not to be cultivated, what is to be developed and what is not to be developed, what is to be entered upon and dwelt in, and what should not be entered upon and dwelt in, and what should be kept in mind and what should not be kept in mind. So keep this in mind as we go through the Buddha's more detailed explanation for each class. So let's deep dive. So the first one is, and how is it, Ananda, that someone of the dark class produces a dark state? Here, someone has been reborn in a low family, a family of kundalas, hunters, bamboo workers, cart makers, or flower scavengers, one that is poor, with little food and drink, that subsists with difficulty, where food and clothing are obtained with difficulty, and he is ugly, unsightly, dwarfish, and much illness. Blind, crippled, lame, or paralyzed, he does not obtain food, drink, clothing, and vehicles, garlands, scents, and unguents, bedding, housing, and lighting. He engages in misconduct by body, speech, and mind. In consequence, with the breakup of the body after death, he is reborn in the plane of misery, in a bad destination, in the lower world, in hell. It is in such a way that someone of the dark class produces a dark state. So, from what we've just examined in the Chulla Kamma Vibhanga Sutta about inferior and superior states, we can see that this person undertook unwholesome karma or misconduct by body, speech, and mind in the past to produce this kind of inferior result. So, low-born means they were obstinate and arrogant in the past. Poor or having poverty means they did not give offerings of requisites to ascetics and Brahmins in the past. Ugly and dwarfish means they had an angry and irritable character in the past. And with much illness means they injured beings with their hands or weapons in the past. And in this current birth, they continue to engage out of wrong view in misconduct by body, speech, and mind, meaning they haven't overcome the wrong view. So, as a consequence, with the breakup of the body after death, they will be reborn in a bad destination in the lower realms and remain ignorant and deluded, bound to samsara and this whole mess of suffering. So, this is what the Buddha means by dark class produces a dark state. When we meditate, we need to put ourselves into this dark class producing a dark state and wisely contemplate. So, in the past, we didn't know the Buddha's teachings, and out of ignorance and delusion, we did unwholesome or misconduct by body, speech, and mind, and it produced this kind of human birth with its challenges. So, we may not have the extreme of the Buddha's example in this Chalabhajati Sutta for dark class producing dark state. But each of us can certainly see that there are deficiencies in the kind of birth that we've come into. We're not high born, we're not exceptionally wealthy, we're not of great beauty, we have all kinds of illnesses, and so on. So, as we've highlighted before, it's important to see ourselves as inferior, not to have conceit and raise ourselves, otherwise, we can't penetrate this Dhamma. When we see that our past misconduct by body, speech, and mind has resulted in this current birth with dark results, then we contemplate if we continue with unwholesome, we can expect to produce another dark result. And it can be rebirth like this, or worse, more inferior, such as in the lower realms. So we know from the Petavatu, which are the 51 accounts or stories of the hungry ghosts, they detail the type of misconduct by body, speech, and mind that led to them being reborn into the hungry ghost realm. So it's something to remember. Again, from a super mundane right view, we can see if we are reborn, it is connected with unwholesome. There is no cessation of craving, so there is no cessation of karma, and we remain bound to suffering in the next rebirth. So only when rebirth is ended, karma is ended, suffering is ended, which means nibbana. So that is what is wholesome. And then the second one is, and how is it, Ananda, that someone of the dark class produces a bright state? Here, someone has been reborn in a low family in the same description, and he does not receive food and lighting. And then in this lifetime, he engages in good conduct by body, speech, and mind. In consequence, with the breakup of the body after death, he is reborn in a good destination in the heavenly world. It is in such a way that someone of the dark class produces a bright state. So, again, due to unwholesome karma or misconduct by body, speech, and mind in the past, they produce this kind of inferior result. The difference in this case is in this current birth, they now engage in good conduct by body, speech, and mind, meaning they abandon the unwholesome for the wholesome. And as a consequence, with the breakup of the body after death, they're reborn in a good destination in the heavenly world. So, how does this happen? In the current birth, you would expect this person gains a good friend or a good teacher who encourages them to refrain from the unwholesome, so all the misconduct. And they encourage them to develop the wholesome and help them to understand the Buddha's teachings, such as the Four Noble Truths, and enable them to develop right view. And therefore, the right path unfolds, the Noble Eightfold Path unfolds. In this case, they have mundane right view that is affected by taints, partaking of merit, ripening in the acquisitions. So again, when we meditate, we need to put ourselves into this dark class producing bright state and wisely contemplate. So again, in the past, we didn't know the Buddha's teachings, and out of ignorance and delusion, we've done unwholesome or misconduct by body, speech, and mind, and have produced this kind of human birth with its inferior state. Now we've been given the Buddha's teachings, we've found good friends, good teachers, and we want to develop. And so we're happy to give up the unwholesome, to give up misconduct by body, speech, and mind, so we can develop the wholesome, the good conduct by body, speech, and mind. And as a result, we can expect rebirth in a good destination in the heavenly world. So we also remind ourselves again from supramundane right view, if we are reborn even to the heavenly world, it is still connected with unwholesome because there's no cessation of craving, no cessation of karma, and we remain bound to suffering. So only Nibbana means rebirth is ended, karma is ended, suffering is ended, and that is what is wholesome. And then the third one is, and how is it, Ananda, that someone of the dark class produces Nibbana, which is neither dark nor bright? Here, someone has been reborn in a low family. And the description is the same, and he does not obtain food and lighting. Having shaved off his head and beard, he puts on ochre robes and goes forth from the household life into homelessness. When he has thus gone forth, he abandons the five hindrances, defilements of the mind, things that weaken wisdom, and then, with his mind well established in the four establishments of mindfulness, he correctly develops the seven factors of enlightenment and produces Nibbana, which is neither dark nor bright. It is in such a way that someone of the dark class produces Nibbana, which is neither dark nor bright. So here we see someone of the dark class produces Nibbana, which is neither dark nor bright. Again, due to unwholesome karma or misconduct by body, speech, and mind in the past, they produce this kind of inferior result. The distinction in this case is in the current birth, they go forth from the household life into homelessness and develop the Noble Eightfold Path with the goal of Nibbana. They abandon the things that weaken wisdom, including the five hindrances, unwholesome states, and establish the four establishments of mindfulness and the seven factors of enlightenment. They cultivate what is wholesome and rooted in wholesome. They develop the right view that is noble, taintless, supramundane, a factor of the path, and penetrate with wisdom the Four Noble Truths. As a consequence, they realize Nibbana in this very life. With the cessation of craving comes the cessation of karma and the cessation of suffering, and rebirth is ended. Nibbana is realized. So again, when we meditate, we put ourselves into this dark class producing Nibbana, which is neither dark nor bright, and wisely contemplate. In the past, we didn't know the Buddha's teachings, and out of ignorance and delusion, we have done unwholesome and have produced this kind of human birth. Now, we have been given the Buddha's teaching, and having abandoned the wrong view, abandoned all unwholesome that aids the wrong path and leads to rebirth. And we wish to cultivate supramundane right view and develop the Noble Eightfold Path with the goal of Nibbana, which is wholesome. And then the fourth one is, and how is it, Ananda, that someone of the bright class produces a dark state? Here, someone has been reborn in a high family, an affluent Kshatriya family, an affluent Brahmin family, or an affluent householder family, one that is rich with great wealth and property, abundant gold and silver, abundant treasures and commodities, abundant wealth and grain, and he is handsome, attractive, graceful, possessing supreme beauty of complexion. He obtains food, drink, clothing, and vehicles, garland, scents, and unguents, bedding, housing, and lighting. He engages in misconduct by body, speech, and mind. In consequence, with the breakup of the body after death, he is reborn in the plane of misery, in a bad destination, in the lower world, in hell. It is in such a way that someone of the bright class produces a dark state. Again, from what we examined in the Chula Kamma Vibhanga Sutta, we can see that this person undertook wholesome kamma or good conduct by body, speech, and mind in the past, and this has produced this kind of superior result. So high born means they are not obstinate and arrogant in the past. Affluent with great wealth means they gave offerings of requisites to ascetics and Brahmins in the past. Handsome and attractive means they did not have an angry and irritable character in the past. So they are of the bright class, having some wisdom and understanding based on the mundane right view about wholesome and unwholesome states, blamable and blameless states, what is to be cultivated and what is not to be cultivated, and so on. However, in this current birth, they probably associate with bad friends and come under the influence of bad friends. And this leads to growth in unwholesome states. So they engage in misconduct by body, speech, and mind, and they decline in the wholesome states. As a result, this person becomes neglectful. They lack mindfulness and clear comprehension, and they grow in dark qualities and become overcome by the dark. So as a consequence, with the breakup of the body after death, they'll be reborn in a bad destination in the lower realms. But they're still bound to samsara and this whole mess of suffering. So again, when we contemplate or meditate, we need to put ourselves into this bright class producing dark state and wisely contemplate. So in the past, knowing Buddha's teachings and having mundane right view, we've done wholesome or we've done good conduct and produced this kind of human birth with some superior quality. Now, in this current birth, if we were to associate with bad friends, wrong company, it would lead to growth in unwholesome qualities. So we would start to do misconduct by body, speech, and mind, and we start to decline in the wholesome. Naturally, we'd become neglectful. We'd stray from the Noble Eightfold Path and start cultivating the wrong path. The problem with this scenario is we were on the right track of being part of the bright path, but we have endangered ourselves by reverting back to the unwholesome. So we can expect to produce a dark result or rebirth in a bad destination in the lower realms. Again, from supramundane right view, we can see if we are reborn, it's connected with unwholesome. So there's no cessation of craving, there's no cessation of kamma, and we remain bound to suffering. So only when there's rebirth that it's unwholesome. So when there's no rebirth, kamma is ended, suffering is ended, which means nibbana. So that's what's wholesome. And then the fifth one is, and how is it, Ananda, that someone of the bright class produces a bright state? Here, someone has been reborn in a high family and the same description, obtaining good food and lighting. He engages in good conduct by body, speech, and mind. In consequence, with the break of the body after death, he is reborn in a good destination in a heavenly world. It is in such a way that someone of the bright class produces a bright state. So again, due to wholesome kamma or good conduct by body, speech, and mind in the past, they've produced this kind of superior result. The difference in this case is that in the current birth, based on mundane right view, they continue to engage in good conduct by body, speech, and mind. They have the support of good friends who encourage them in the Dhamma. They answer their questions. And when they practice correctly in accordance with the Dhamma. They grow in knowledge, wisdom, and insight. So as a consequence, with the breakup of the body after death, they're reborn in a good destination, in a heavenly world. So again, when we meditate, we put ourselves into this bright class producing bright state and wisely contemplate. So again, in the past, knowing Buddha's teachings and having the mundane right view, we've done wholesome. We've done good conduct, which has produced this kind of human birth with some superior qualities. Now, in this current birth, if we associate with good friends, with good teachers, and get their support, we have the opportunity to ask questions to penetrate the Dhamma. It would lead to growth in wholesome. So we can expect to produce a bright result or rebirth in a good destination in the heavenly realms. And again, from supramundane right view, we can see if we're reborn, it's connected with unwholesome. We would still experience suffering. So no cessation of craving means no cessation of karma, means we're still bound to this suffering. So what we want is actually rebirth to end, for karma to end, for suffering to end, which means nibbana, that which is wholesome. And then the last class of rebirth is, and how is it, Ananda, that someone of the bright class produces nibbana, which is neither dark nor bright? Here, someone has been reborn in a high family, so the same description, obtaining food and obtaining lighting. And then, having shaved off his head and beard, he puts on ochre robes and goes forth from the household life into homelessness. When he has thus gone forth, he abandons the five hindrances, defilements of the mind, things that weaken wisdom. And then, with his mind well established in the four establishments of mindfulness, he correctly develops the seven factors of enlightenment and produces nibbana, which is neither dark nor bright. It is in such a way that someone of the bright class produces nibbana, which is neither dark nor bright. So here we see someone of the bright class produces nibbana. Again, due to wholesome karma, good conduct by body, speech, and mind in the past, they produced this kind of superior result. Now they've been given the Buddhist teachings and they actually contemplate. And so when they penetrate, what happens is they actually realize nibbana. So in the same way, when we contemplate that we have produced this kind of birth, having understood Dhamma before, we've done the good conduct, here we are again, and this time we continue on the path by developing the Buddha's teachings, developing the enlightenment factors, developing mindfulness, and we abandon all the unwholesome and what aids the unwholesome, and we follow the good path, the noble path. And therefore, we ultimately realize nibbana. We cultivate the supramundane right view. We develop the Noble Eightfold Path with the goal of nibbana, that which is wholesome. And what we want is for rebirth to be ended. So we can see when we wisely contemplate wholesome and unwholesome, blamable and blameless, inferior and superior, dark and bright states with their counterparts in this sequence, we can penetrate this Dhamma. And this is what the Buddha actually means to frequently contemplate karma. So in the Sutta, Anguttara Nikaya, chapter 5, discourse number 57, the Buddha stated, people engage in this conduct by body, speech, and mind. But when one often reflects upon this theme, such misconduct is either completely abandoned or diminished. This noble disciple reflects thus, I am not the only one who is the owner of one's karma, the heir of one's karma, who is karma as one's origin, karma as one's relative, karma as one's resort. Who will be the heir of whatever karma, good or bad, that one does? All beings that come and go, that pass away and undergo rebirth, are owners of their karma, heirs of their karma. All have karma as their origin, karma as their relative, karma as their resort. All will be heirs of whatever karma, good or bad, that they do. And the Buddha's encouragement is, as he often reflects on this theme, the path is generated. He pursues this path, develops it, and cultivates it. As he does so, the fetters are entirely abandoned, and underlying tendencies are uprooted. So we can see, if we deepen our contemplation of karma, as we've done in this session, with the right view that is noble, taintless, supramundane, a factor of the path, the Noble Eightfold Path is generated because we abandon the wrong path. If the fetters are abandoned and the underlying tendencies are uprooted, we can realize the cessation of craving, the cessation of karma, and therefore the cessation of suffering, which means nibbana. So let's recap the meditation of how we wisely contemplate these four sets of qualities, remembering this is a supramundane contemplation. So we begin with wholesome and unwholesome. The key question that we ask is, how do we construct this birth? So this is connected with our meditation based on the Samadhi Bhavana Sutta, or part of the first doorway to Nibbana, Dukkha Paṭipatthana Viññāna. We see that it is due to the arising phenomena of form, Samudaya. We took delight, welcome, remain holding, and delight arose. Delight is the condition for clinging to arise. With clinging, there is existence. With existence, birth. Birth is connected with aging and death and this whole mass of suffering. So it's through dependent origination that we constructed this birth. So in the meditation, it's important to understand birth, this arising phenomena, as an unwholesome state. So it's akusala. Not just birth in this existence as unwholesome, but in all realms of existence, even the more subtle ones. And then we examine the passing away phenomena of form, Athangama in Pali. If we don't take delight, we don't welcome, don't remain holding, there's the cessation of delight. With the cessation of delight, we have the cessation of suffering, the cessation of existence, the cessation of birth, the cessation of this whole mess of suffering. So here we can understand not wanting to be reborn or cessation is the wholesome state, the kusala. So we are wisely contemplating the distinction between wholesome and unwholesome in a super mundane sense. And then we come to blamable and blameless. So we contemplate the Buddha's words in the Savajja Sutta, which says blamable means wrong path, which is wrong view, wrong thought, wrong speech, wrong action, wrong livelihood, wrong effort, wrong mindfulness, wrong concentration, wrong knowledge, and wrong liberation. Whereas blameless means noble tenfold path, which is right view, right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration, right knowledge, and right liberation. So we examined the 10 unwholesome states by body, speech, and mind, and saw how they're rooted in greed, hatred, and delusion. And we know they aid the wrong path, so the blamable path, beginning with wrong view and leading to wrong liberation. So we need to acknowledge that this is what we tend to cultivate, what we indulge in, what we justify. If we acknowledge this, then we see that we need to abandon the 10 unwholesome states rooted in greed, hatred, and delusion. We need to abandon the blamable path, because if we don't, then there's no escape from suffering. Instead, what we want is the blameless path, which means 10 wholesome states, so abstaining from the unwholesome by body, speech, and mind, that which is rooted in non-greed, non-hatred, and non-delusion. So we develop the noble path from the right view all the way to noble liberation. So, having contemplated blamable and blameless, we can then contemplate again, how did I construct this body? And we can see it is due to unwholesome in the past. If we continue with the unwholesome, then we can expect the same again. So, what we understand is this: if we do what is blamable, so misconduct by body, speech, and mind, we develop the wrong path. This will result in rebirth, which is unwholesome. But if we do what is blameless, so good conduct by body, speech, and mind, and we develop the noble path, this will result in the cessation of rebirth ultimately. And this is what is wholesome. And now we come to inferior and superior. So we examine the Chulavibhanga Sutta. So inferior and superior states are connected with the results of our action, so our karma. So inferior being short-lived, sickly, ugly, uninfluential, poor, lowborn, and stupid, and superior being long-lived, healthy, influential, wealthy, high-born, and wise. And so when we contemplate the results of our karma, so the results of our actions, we need to place ourselves in the lowest position. So we're inferior, not superior. If we think we're superior, then we won't be able to penetrate the Dhamma. So instead, we compare ourselves to divine beings, to devas. And then we can see that we have birthed inferior states in this human life. So compared to them, we are certainly short-lived. We are sickly. We are ugly compared to them. We are uninfluential. We are poor. We are lowborn. And we are stupid or foolish. And we can also ask, how did this happen? And it's because of our past misconduct. So we're short-lived because we killed living beings in the past. We're sickly because we injured beings with our hands or with weapons in the past. We're ugly because we had an angry and irritable character in the past. We are uninfluential because we were envious, resentful, and begrudged others' good fortune in the past. We are poor because we didn't give offerings or requisites to ascetics or Brahmins in the past. We are lowborn because we are obstinate and arrogant in the past. We are stupid or foolish because we didn't visit ascetics and Brahmins to ask questions in the past. And so on like that. And then we examine the superior states, namely long-lived, healthy, influential, wealthy, high-born, and wise, and see that they're connected to the good conduct by body, speech, and mind. And with the understanding of our bigger predicament, that we're bound to samsara and this whole mass of suffering, and we have been for countless lifetimes, we remember not to become conceited due to these superior states. And we contemplate that karma is the cause and condition for rebirth with inferior and superior states, where there is rebirth, so arising and passing away in lower realms, in the human realm, or in these divine realms. So if rebirth is not ended, then craving has not been abandoned. We are still bound by karma and subject to suffering. So if we penetrate this Dhamma, we would not want to be reborn in any realm of existence. Instead, we want to incline towards the cessation of craving, meaning the cessation of karma, and the cessation of suffering, meaning nibbana. And then the last one we come to is dark and bright with their counterparts. So the Buddha, as we went through in the Chalabhijati Sutta, outlined six classes of rebirth. So dark class producing a dark result, dark class producing a bright result, dark class producing nibbana, which is neither dark nor bright, and then the bright class producing dark, a dark result, bright class producing a bright result, and bright class producing nibbana, which is neither dark nor bright. What we need to examine in each class of rebirth is to wisely contemplate why we are born to each one of them and seeing how they're linked to inferior and superior states, as we did before. So by the end of the meditation, what we come to is a very deep insight that birth in any realm of existence in samsara is unwholesome. So we've seen that very clearly by going through the six classes and also all the way back to the beginning of our meditation. So previously, we would have assigned value to these different classes of rebirth. And now we realize we don't want to give any value because it's unwholesome. We want to give up the craving or attachment for these kinds of rebirth. We no longer want to be bound by karma, which conditions inferior or superior states. And so we understand cessation of karma means cessation of bodily action, cessation of verbal action, and the cessation of mental action. So that means cessation of volitional formation, so sankharas. Through our contemplation of these four sets of qualities, we recognize the Noble Eightfold Path is the way leading to the cessation of karma, the cessation of suffering, and realizing nibbana. We see at the end of this meditation that nibbana is truly what is wholesome, blameless, superior, and neither dark nor bright, in a noble, taintless, and a supramundane sense. So that is our goal. Each part of this meditation comes back to birth or rebirth as unwholesome, and nibbana is what is wholesome. So the meditation, as we develop it, this understanding gets stronger and stronger. The happiness that arises during the meditation is because we've discerned that what it really means by wholesome, by blameless, by superior, by neither dark nor bright. And with this understanding, we abandon unwholesome for wholesome, and we don't assign any value to volitional formations. And we realize the cessation of volitional formations. This is what happens in the meditation. So we are blameless, developing the blameless path with the goal of nibbana. What is valuable to us is actually nibbana. So we can keep sequentially contemplating wholesome and unwholesome, blameable and blameless, inferior and superior, dark and bright with their counterparts, forwards and backwards, seeing the truth. So it's a really wonderful meditation. So we've now come to the end of this session on a deeper contemplation of karma. We can end our session with gratitude to the Buddha for all these teachings that we've been through in this session. And we can share the merit with all sentient beings. May all beings be happy and well. May all beings be free from suffering. Blessings of the Triple Gem. Wishing you well. Theruvan Saranai.